which we started a while ago. And everything seems to revolve around one central theme, and that central theme that runs throughout the entire story here is the idea that Eliezer cannot leave the land. That's clear. I'm sorry. I mean, Yitzchak couldn't leave the land. Okay, Yitzchak could not leave the land. So, given then, we don't know if, we're not sure at this point whether or not Avram would have appointed Eliezer to choose a wife, whether he would have had that mission, even if it was possible for him to leave the land. It seems he would have. I think I made that point. Yeah, because
in a situation where he can't find a wife.
Yeah. He says the cop. I think we made that point. Yeah, from Rashi, because he says that you'll be free from the obligation. What obligation? From the oath, and then pick one from Anu Eshkol Mami, which means to say that he would be picking a wife. Anyway, so the that we'll try and explain, because it seems to go against our own concept. It seems to go against our own concept, certainly against our own custom. Our own custom is that we choose our own husbands or wives. We go through the process, the search process, right? It's like a search committee. Ourselves. Certainly a person that's capable, it's questionable whether we're qualified to do so, but we do it. Certainly a person like Yitzchak, we would imagine, is qualified, right? Would know what to look for. Okay. But as the story is set up, we don't really have that problem, because it was Abraham's intention not to choose a girl from Canaan. So therefore it necessitated believing going into Chutzlart, and that you have that factor that Yitzchak could not leave the land, because he was in Ola Tamima. Okay? And we'll try and elucidate that. Now, other than that, we want to understand what we said could be construed as a bit of a machlokas, because Eliezer was not a fool. We just asked him factually. Eliezer was an intelligent person. He was an extremely intelligent person, a chacham, because we learn that from the sicha. That's what we from the sicha of the avadim of the yavos. They were on such a high level. So he raises what seems to be a good question. In Pasuk Hey, Chav Dalah Hey is a very good question. Vayom Eloh Eved, the Eved said, Ulai Lo Sova Ha'isha Lo Lecha Zachalei Al Arat Hazov. Suppose the woman will not want to go after me, to come after me to this land. Which, good point. So let's say I do that and I find the proper woman. But there's only one hitch. It's not an easy thing. You see, he put it through a tremendous. This will explain. We'll go some distance to explaining the tremendous effort that Eliezer put in. The Torah records every detail of his attempt to persuade. He had found the right girl. That was the only part of the mission. Wasn't successful having found the right girl. He was very happy because he set up the test and he was convinced that this was the right girl. But the next thing was to convince the parents. She was a young girl, to let her leave. And he was not content to just make an arrangement and say, we'll come back. You know, they wanted to keep her there for a while. He wouldn't accept that. He insisted upon taking her back right now. And that was very difficult in a very short period of time to convince the parents to allow a young girl. Right? Yes, May Nikta and her nurse. I mean, she had a care, whatever. I don't know exactly how old she was at that point, but she was a kid, basically. Right? She still had her nanny. And nanny went along with her. So that was extremely important. I mean, you could see that Eliezer is anticipating that point.
We're saying that the girl won't want to go back, not that the family
right.
won't want to send her.
Yeah, of course. Well, it could be, yeah. But included in that, that's true. Because that's the primary thing. He doesn't know what the situation is going to be. Okay. He assumes that he'll find the girl and she'll be an adult, you know, making her own decisions. Right? Okay. So it'll be her decision. Well, by the way, even in that case also, it boiled down to what she wanted, because he really convinced them. Then they finally said, let's ask the girl. And she said, Aleph. She said, would you go with this man? She said, she'll go. So she made the decision to go. They were enlightened parents. Okay? That tells you a lot, that she was on the level, because you wouldn't ask a kid, what do you want? Parents, intelligent parents on a crucial issue, are not going to consult the little kid. What do you? It's meaningless. The kid doesn't know. I mean, you have to have some responsibility to make a decision for your child. The child doesn't know. Even if the child has expressed a preference, that has no relevance unless it's on a level where they can understand. Anyways, the question is a logical question. Ha'hoshev Ashev es bincha el aretz asher yatzasa misham. Shall I return your son to the land that he came from? And Avram answered him very strongly. And Hishama Lacha Pentashiv Espini Shama. Hishama Lacha. Which is very, very strange. Why does he have to say Hishama Lacha? Hishama Lacha is like a warning. Take heed. It's like an azhara. Be very careful. As though that's the kind of a lashon that would be used when you're warning somebody against doing something. There's a taiva to do, like a temptation. I'm warning you. When a parent gives instruction, there's two kinds of tones. When it's something which is indifferent, a matter of indifference, you don't really care if you do it this way or that way, you know. So therefore, you just tell them what to do. But I'm warning you. Is a case where I know that you're going off to college and you're going to want to mingle with certain groups and so on, and I'm against that, and I'm warning you, because warning is always addressing itself to a certain powerful emotion that you might have, right? But it doesn't seem that Eliezer seems to be asking a purely logical question. What does he care? He just needs to know. It's a need to know kind of thing. And the answer is basically no. But then we said Zion is very strange, because in Zion he seems to indicate that he has inside information that this is going to work out, because he's clued into the Hashgacha. And he says that God, the Lord of Heaven, why doesn't he refer to God as the Lord of the Earth? Okay. Only the God of Heaven is the God of the Earth too. Alright, but we'll leave that aside. Who took me from the house of my father and from the land of my birth, my birthplace, and who spoke to me, and who swore to me, saying, to your children will I give this land. He will send his angel before you. Okay. Which means, angel means the Hashgacha, basically. Forces of nature, which will be operating favorably towards a favorable resolution, in your favor. And you will take a woman for my son from there. Seems that here he's telling him that he will succeed in the mission, so not to worry. Of course, everything, once you have this, then everything else becomes a problem, because what do you have to warn him? Yishamalacha. First of all, what do you have to warn him? Yishamalacha and Toshavas with Yishamah. That would only come into the picture where there's a problem. In other words, where the mission can only be. The mission can only be accomplished by your bringing him back there, and I'm afraid that you might want to do it, so I'm warning you not to do it. But now we find out in the very next pasuk that problem is not going to arise. So then, in retrospect, the previous pasuk becomes difficult. But then Ches is openly seems to be contradicting what he's saying. But if she doesn't want, in lo sova yishu alecha zarecha, she doesn't want to go after you, meaning what? And therefore the mission will fail. Right, and then somehow or other the angel won't get it right. Then v'nikisa mishvati zos. Then I'm going to free you from this obligation. You finish your job and don't you worry. Rak espinilo soshev shama. Again, he repeats that. And don't bring my son back there. And then he makes him take an oath about this. So those are the essential questions. Okay. It's been suggested, perhaps, that all the Ashkacha, all the Olav is saying, that is that you'll find the proper girl. It doesn't say that she'll be willing to go. I don't think so, because first of all, Avram is saying that Avram is telling him this in answer to his, that's his problem. That's why he asked the question, and Avram is saying, no, this is the answer. Avram is telling him this to strengthen him, to be mechazik him, that I know it's going to succeed. So he's not going to tell him something which really doesn't even answer the question, which just reinforces the question, right? And the plain line, right? So he's telling him, God, I know for a fact this God took me out of my house and swore to me, etc. He'll send his angel and you'll take a wife from there, meaning to say you won't have your problem, your problem won't come up. And the plain mashmas, the plain implication of the word is that v'lokachti, you'll take. What good is it then, contrarily, what good is it to say that I know that God's going to find a girl for you who will not want to come? I mean, so what good is that? Then it's what's the benefit of such a thing when I'm completely opposed? And if that's the case, you're not going to have that. She will not be the wife. That's tantamount to saying that the hashkacha is not going to work. Okay. Clearly, that if that's what it means, then that statement has no benefit, has no value at all. In fact, it only reinforces Eliezer. Now, what we did, we got off a little bit on a tangent. I remember at the time, going into the whole purpose of life. The reason why I got into that was because I think that the theme, the underlying theme, was the mission of Yitzchak, you know, the Yavos, the role of the Yavos. And I was saying that it's a very important idea that Yadus, the mission, each person has a mission, obviously, in life, their mission. You're created by God for a purpose. So what is that purpose? The purpose, really, I guess, it's all the perfection of the self, but the perfection has to be broken into two categories. There's one in which you're obligated. That's the whole obligation, to choose life, you know, I place before you the good and the evil, and to choose life, to perfect yourself. One is essentially a selfish thing. You have the person in Yahadis has to be totally selfish. I've explained this many times. I'll come back to it again if you need further amplification, that the world has it wrong. That self, the greatest virtue is to be selfish, truly understood. Every tzaddik is a selfish person. Gomel nafsho ish tzaddik. The tzaddik person is one who's benefiting himself. The only person that knows how to live selfishly is the tzaddik. And every Russia is really a selfless individual, selfless, when understood properly. But the second element is that each person has an obligation to the system. That's part of the will of God. That's part of Avos Hashem. And that is, and you see that in the life of Abraham. And you see that the Rambam describes it, that the, and it has to be in that order, because it's impossible for a person to benefit others until he's benefited himself, perfected himself. Of course, within relatively speaking, so far as it's possible. That's a very important idea, by the way, especially for the youth of today. Youth of today, we have it completely the opposite. You know, they go to college, this and that, they get, instead of studying and learning, they get involved in all kinds of courses, they're going to save the world. The only thing is, it's a big question. Like, one time I had a conversation with a guy in yeshiva, he didn't want to stay in yeshiva anymore, he wanted to go out and he wanted to help people. So I explained to him that, how much help can you do? You can only help people, insofar as you have knowledge, is what they really need. The amount of help, I said, is like a doctor. He studies a little bit of medicine for 1 year, and then he wants to go out, and there's people that need help, so he's going to go out and, now, well, what makes more sense? To leave these, forget about these people, whatever suffering is going on, you leave it alone, and you spend 6, 7, 8 years studying, mastering medicine, and then when you go out, you'll do much more benefit for the world. The only way to go. Our society is totally crazy. I mean, a person goes to college, let's say college. The assumption is that he's going there to learn. Therefore, because he doesn't know. On the other hand, he's getting involved in all kinds of courses and changing the whole world. How do you know what to do for the world? That presupposes that you do know. So, I mean, either you do know, in which case, why are you going to college? Or else you're going to college because you don't know. If that's the case, what are you getting involved in all kinds of policies to change the world? You don't have any knowledge. You don't know. If you don't know, you can't fix it. It's like, it would be just absurd. The idea today of youth getting involved in all kinds of political causes on campus is just as absurd as more absurd than a doctor opening up a hospital but he never studied medicine. Okay. The the purpose of the Avos. Okay? The entire nation is founded upon three Avos. So these are the three perfected personalities. Alright? Yeah. The three perfected personalities. And again, I'll do this in a general way because it's we just need enough to know Yitzchak, so I don't have to go into all the particulars. This is the concept of Ola Kamima. I would say that what's the idea of an Ola? An Ola is totally consumed. In other, every other carbon, you offer sacrifice to God, and part of it is consumed. I mean, it's there, but part of it is eaten. You know, to satisfy ordinary human needs. You know, eating, I feel, eaten by the kohanim, some are eaten by the owners, the ones who bring the carbon. And the Ola cannot be completely. So it represents total, something which is completely dedicated to the service of God, and there's nothing separate, no personal, no involvement in the personal. Now each of the Avos represents a different element. They all represent the quintessential person, the Gitzel Malakim, an individual who lives his life. They represent the model of Adam, someone who represents, who lives his life and exemplifies the Tzelem Olakim to the highest degree. But each one is in a different aspect, a different with Avraham, it's essentially Chesed, the Midah of Chesed, which is based upon truth. It shows the capacity of a person to extricate himself from idolatry and to find his way. That's the Tzelem Olakim, that man is a created being, he has a purpose. And in Avram you see that the tremendous, all the world is on one side and Avram is on the other side, which shows you the tremendous capacity of the Tzelem Olakim to extricate itself from falsehood and to discover the Creator and to establish a proper relationship with the Creator. That's what he did. That was his great triumph. That's extremely important. Because everybody says, well, I live in this society, and that societal pressure, but you see that the power of a person is so great if he uses it, if he's willing to use his mind. And to think, he can always discover the truth. He can't make excuses about society. And then you have Yitzchak and you have Yaakov. Now, once you discover the truth about human existence, the purpose of Adam, that the essence of man is really the Tzelem Elokim, the essence of reality is ideas that have a source, and the ultimate source is the Creator. And that's the whole purpose of man, is to relate to the Creator. So then Yitzchak represents, they all partook of this, but Yitzchak represents the Tzelem Elokim in a different way. In other words, in what we call the metaphysical personality, he's the person who lives his life in such a way that he's completely removed from the physical, the highest extent that can go to. In other words, we're all involved. Avram represents a person who's living his life in accordance with the truth and fulfilling that secondary thing, discovery of the truth, and then the chesed, to fulfill the will of God and make that truth available to others. So he's involved with the world. And Yaakov represents a different, represents the midah of Emes, which means the triumph of the Tzelem Elokim in conflict with falsehood, when it comes in confrontation with a false world. See? How justice prevails in a world of falsehood. That would be our side today. Can a person live a just life? Can a person live a just life and be involved in all the activities of business and family and so on and so forth in a society which is totally corrupt, totally false? And still be true. And still know exactly where to draw the line and how to use the seat when halacha demands that you use it. If you come to deceive me, then I'll be deceitful with you, and so forth. That's MS. And it's not a compromising principle. That's the confrontation. That was his confrontation. the confrontation of the just individual in conflict with the world of unjust people. Okay? Now, Yitzhak represents something else. Yitzhak represents the capacity of a person to be an Olah Tamimah. The furthest extent possible. Because in other words, we're all living in two different worlds. Hopefully, in other words. Most people are really living in one world. It's the world of the instinctual. So, you know, when a person is involved, when he departs from the world of ideas, he's like an animal. He's basically an instinctual being. As the Rambam said, even people under the Ashkacha are only under the Ashkacha when they're affected, when they're living in accordance with knowledge, when they're relating to the source of knowledge. That's the Ashkacha. But when they abandon that and they just live in accordance with their animalistic urges, so they're living in animalistic. Well, we go into two different worlds. We're moving from one world into the next. Now, hopefully, the goal is to more and more to be involved in the true world. That's the way you're trying to pattern your life, not to get less and less in the true world and more of more the false world. Nobody wants that. Now, I say that Yitzchak represents the openness. That's a tremendous role model of the individual who's completely, completely involved to the greatest extent possible in the world of ideas. You see, that's why Yitzchak, his whole nature was like that. It even, in a sense, it even makes him unfit. To a large degree, it makes him unfit for a lot of the tasks of ordinary life because he's too metaphysical. He's too far removed. In order to be successful in this world, you've got to partake. You have to have the drive, the emotions. I mean, if a person... That's why I would say it wasn't even a good idea for him to go around to be involved in the selection of the life. He wasn't involved in those areas. It doesn't mean that he had, of course, he had to decide. The decision was his. Because you can't all marry someone unless you can relate to that person. That doesn't make any sense. Yeah, but to go through the whole process of selecting and finding and narrowing it down, he wasn't good at that. He would not be good at these things. He might not have been that good a judge of character, you see, with regard to Esau and Yaakov. It was Rivka. Rivka had that intuition, the understanding. He didn't have. He was fooled. He was able to fool him. Yaakov had to learn. Yaakov was fooled by Lavan the first time around, but then he had to learn. Yaakov's task was a different task. But Yitzchak apparently, and Abraham understood it, that this was his mission. This was his mission to be, because Rachid recently updated this idea, so to speak. He added something which is interesting. He didn't fully explain it. I was very curious to hear a further explanation because he just alluded to it. He mentioned it once. And I'll bring it to your attention. And I think it awaits further elucidation. And he said that he had always said this idea that this is basically what the Yitzchak represents and all that. But he said that there was a certain experience. The cause. He sort of identified the cause. The definitive experience, the defining moment in his life, in his career, I don't know, which had this effect. And what would you say that was? What would you think if I looking into the life of Yitzchak, something in his life, which was the Akedah. Yeah, you heard him say that?
No, I just said that was why
he was on team. Oh, well, I wasn't thinking it that way, no. No, that's not.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, but how do you explain that? The Akedah was just an object. Yeah. Yeah, well, this would be, in other words, the experience of facing death. That he faced death at an early age. For the sake, that had an effect upon him. Effect upon the direction of his energy. So I leave it at that for the time being. That definitely should require further explanation. What?
It doesn't work for everyone. A lot of people face death.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, facing death, by the way, can be a very... assuming that you just faced it and then you overcame it. You survived. Facing death and surviving it can be a very beneficial experience. It's an amazing thing. The only thing... It's a wonderful... can be a tremendous help to a person in giving... Because people will always say that at that moment... they saw things in a totally different perspective. I mean, everyone will tell you that. When a person was facing a calamity, a person that's living, pursuing all the materialistic things and the crazy kind of lifestyle. I mean, I've heard many people have said that. And they faced it, they realized that they could just be dying, and they how stupid all these things are, how nonsensical. The only thing is that that's a momentary reaction, and it wears off. It wears off, and they return. The old emotions, it's a mistake that people make. They think that an emotional experience can really change you and perfect you. It's not true. The emotional experience, however, is extremely beneficial to the person who has a proper philosophy. The person that's living all of his life, and he's really in line with these ideas, you see? And then he has certain emotional experiences, so then it's not the emotion, in other words. Therefore, it's a keen in the triumph of ideas. He's much more committed to the ideas. That's why the facing of death for a philosopher, someone who's living his life with correct ideas, is going to have a tremendous impact upon him and make him a greater person. He'll emerge as a much, much greater person. You see, because to a certain extent, even though he was a great person, the energies were still, you see, were still being drawn in a certain direction. He had certain fantasies that he had to contend with. That's what the Rambam says. I mean, I was just the Shia mentioning about old age. It's part of the Shia of Tshuva. Tshuva Gemur. The Rambam talks about that. This is related to the Rambam's explanation of the death by the Nishika, which is something we'll come back to. Okay? So anyways, without going further into that, Rav Chait made the point that that experience had a determinative effect upon him. And he, in a sense, I would say that he was completely removed. But not removed, you have to be careful. This is a dangerous idea. Yadis does not recommend that you remove yourself from life, from Derech Eretz. And, you know, that was Miriam. Miriam spoke about Moshe, that he removed himself from Derech Eretz. All right, that was Lashon Hara, but that was kind of a special case. But in general, yeah, but she didn't intend to disparage him. But in general, a person shouldn't remove themselves because to gratify an emotion of asceticism, it's very powerful, but it's also an emotion, and it's a bad emotion, even though religious people elevate that emotion. You got to be careful. You got to be on guard against the instinctual emotions and the religious emotions. Either one can destroy you. But this was different. This was not removing. This wasn't a thing. It wasn't a matter of asceticism, which is essentially to remove yourself from the world of gratification. It meant that all of his gratification was in the world of the intellectual. All of it was in the world of the intellectual. You follow his relationship to the practical, to the instinctual, to the material was minimal. When I think of that's a model. You see, that's a model that we have to have. The extent to which a person can go, we know. So you'll tell me that a person is composed of two components. He's an instinctual being, a rational animal. So we know that you can live a rational life. That's one idea. But the extent to which the full power of the Tzelem Elokim, the extent to which a person can live a life which is almost like an angel, almost exclusively involved in the world of ideas, that extent, that's something else. That's a model. That renders him into a model that's very important to us. Each of the Avos represents a certain ideal that's very important to us. Who comes to mind in terms of history, historical figure? These are prehistory, so to speak, you know. The Gedolim that represents this. Well, I don't know. We've got, the Vilna Gaon seems to. The story, you know. Yeah, the Vilna Gaon seems to have been. He was totally withdrawn from the world. And yet, I mean, he was the most important person in the world. He seems to represent that. He was totally. His need of the physical. And it wasn't an ascetic thing. You have to understand. He was powerfully involved, totally involved. And he wasn't like suffering to stay up all night. And that's all right. That's the childish notion we get in yeshiva. You know, to torture yourself and force yourself to do mitzvahs and stay up all night and learn and all that. No, I mean, he was completely involved. If he couldn't miss the idea of falling asleep and missing an idea, you see, was like the idea to him, this was so real, so powerful, that in his framework, the idea of sleeping and falling asleep would be to us like to a businessman, like falling asleep in the middle of a deal, not going to that meeting where he could make another $10 billion. I mean, it's absurd after you fall asleep. But I don't care whether you're tired or not tired. It's crazy. Or any one of us is like falling asleep and missing, you know, like the plane. You're going to go on your trip to whatever. I don't know, Australia. The thing is, in terms of the proper values, there's no question. There's no question. But there's a certain amount of savvy, let's use that term, to be able to maneuver. You don't have a computer and you just punch in what you want and then you get the girl. I mean, in order to, right? I know, I tried it. It didn't work. It will in the future. They work
now. Because you don't know what you want. Maybe you feel like this.
No, it can't be. Can't be. When you want, if you send them into a strange land, Eliezer had savvy. You see, that's why the all of the scripture. He knew how to handle himself. He was a chacham. That's the sicha schur. That's the sicha of the avadim. There's a difference between the avadim of the avos and the avos. The sicha of the avadim of the avos is extremely important. You see, there's a difference. Ramaya said an idea recently. I'm just I don't know if I remember it exactly, but it was a nice idea. he was saying with regard to that it really reflects perfection as applied to daily life. That's what ordinary the ideas that he was involved in were purely abstract ideas, metaphysics, total metaphysics, abstract. He's not involved in the practical. The ideas, you see, we're involved at the high level. A person is involved in ideas in psychology, even in technology. It's chachma in business. Even you can have chachma. Guys are chachma in business. That's chachma, but that's not the kind of chachma that's the level of chachma. There's nothing wrong with it. But Yitzchak is involved in purely abstract. He's purely abstract, totally involved in the abstract metaphysical ideas. And that type of a person, you can't expect. I mean, we're not talking. There's no such thing as a Superman over here. A person that's involved in that type of thinking, totally abstract, theoretical thinking. By the way, you even see this in the world of halacha. The greatest poskim are not necessarily the greatest abstract thinkers. It's a totally different skill. The posek, the greatest posek of our time was Rav Moshe. He was not the greatest, well, in my opinion. This is an opinion. I don't mean to put myself as the judge, but this is an idea which is accepted by, just about everybody. In my opinion, Rabbi Soloveitchik was the abstract thinker, the greatest theoretician of Torah in his time. Doesn't mean he was the greatest posek. Psak is a different area. Psak is a different skill. It's one thing to go through theory, but then there's a practical system over here. How does the system operate? How does it work? How do you make the decision? That has to take into consideration all kinds of factors. A certain intuition and knowledge of the law, how the law works in a practical way, how halacha works. And people and situations, how to apply to situations. It's a different kind of thing. You see? Not every great, I'll give you an easy case. Not every theoretician in American law would necessarily be a good lawyer. There's a whole different deal in law school. A guy could be a professor and teach all, it doesn't mean, but in a court, he can get creamed by an ordinary lawyer. So you follow? There you got to know you're dealing more with practical. Now, you can't expect that a man that's totally involved in abstract metaphysics is going to come to a business meeting. He's not involved. You pick up all that type of intuition and knowledge and practical and how to deal with people, how to maneuver people and everything. That's not your world. You're not even in that world. You're not suited for it. You're not suited for it. I mean, he wouldn't understand it even. Like, he would just be straight and logical right? And these people are not straight and logical, and it's all emotional and political and the world of politics. You think the world of politics? Go to Washington. As an abstract metaphysical, who's going to listen to you? No one's the world. Yeah, you could take. You could be a chacham. You could have these, but you got to be a different type of personality. Someone who has the capacity to take the chachma and to figure out this guy's personality and that, and the power structures and all of that, and he has all the know-how and to work through the. That's more something that Yaakov represents. You see, how to take the true ideas and to deal with phony people and know what to say to them and how not to be. Not to be outmaneuvered by them, and to the triumph. See, that he represents the triumph of chachma, the triumph of that it's possible. That it's possible to be honest and to be just and to apply chachma in a corrupt world. That's a different ideal, you see? So each Av represents a different concept. It's a prison of Yitzchak to say that, because that's, we're sort of looking at like a Superman kind of a thing. Person that's an Ola Tamima, that is completely involved in the abstract metaphysical world, you can't expect that he's going to go out there in the world of politics and he's going to get killed. That's not his world. You see? Not that, I mean, if given time, if he was forced to do so, he would adjust, and I'm sure he'd be very good, better than the... But that's not... You see, it would be a distraction. That's not the point. The point, Avram did not want him to be distracted, to leave the land, for him to abandon Eretz Yisrael. Would be a distraction for him. Would be bad for him, would be harmful for him. And there was no necessity for it. Because this confirms what you're saying. So take Eliezer, who has the know-how. Because there's a selection process, you know. And he'll go, doesn't mean that whoever he picks you're going to marry. Because Yitzhak has to see, I mean, there's a personal factor there. He has to like her. He has to want to marry her. He's a human being. Yeah, but it's a rational approach. Because how are you going to find the right one? You assume, I mean, are we all using the rational approach today? Is this the rational approach? That each person is there on their own and, friends, dates, this, blind date setups, you got dating for years and years and hoping you'll find the right one? I don't know. Well, the divorce rate is pretty high in today's society, even among religious Jews. But this is a very rational approach to take someone that knows the person very, very well, that knows really what to look for, and you see the test. The qualities, the midos, and not only that, but she obviously was physically presentable, beautiful little girl, etc., and so on and so forth. Everything was right, and therefore, you have a very strong assumption that this will work. If it didn't, it didn't, but it wouldn't. But it was a very rational approach, much more rational than sending Yitzchak. Okay, now. That's what I would say in general. I mean, there's more. We can come back to this theme of Ola Tamima and why he doesn't leave the land at all. Yes. That's one. What? Yes, by the way, I'm explaining it now on a plain level. Maybe there's more to it, but on a plain level, it's just that here, Avram has secured the situation. Avram had developed the foundation. I mean, he had a place on Eresh Kamamra. He was, he had established a presence in the land. You see that tremendous respect for him. So he doesn't have to. Once you're in Chutz La'aretz, you're a stranger, and you have to grapple with all kinds of problems, all kinds of enemies. You see, so Avram had to leave. I mean, Avram was. I mean, he had to come into the land, and Avram could leave the land. He left when there was a famine. He could deal with those things. That was part of his personality. Yaakov had to leave the land. Excuse me, that was in line with his... He had to overcome that weakness that he had. And he had to learn how to deal with the himself. So he had to fight and conquer. But for Yitzhak, it would have been a diversion. It would have been a diversion, because you're putting him into a situation where he's going to have to grapple. He's going to have to fight with all kinds of... Everything's been said. Why leave? It's like going... We've established a community in New York, in Far Rockaway. We have yeshiva, we have shul, we have community and all that. And now you can come in, so you can sit and learn. You don't have to worry, where am I going to find kosher food? You don't have to worry... with anti-Semitism, because Gentiles are not used to seeing Jews, and there's any problems. You're not going to have to deal with politics and everything. You're not going to have to fight every inch of the way to establish a turf. You're not going to have to do that. Alright? If you go, but you want to go across the country, you want to go to Arizona, you want to go to Utah, whatever it is, and establish your own, because you like the weather over there. I'm telling you, if you go there, you're going to have to start from scratch. They don't have any shuls there, so you'll start your own shul. You'll have to find 10 Jews, then you're going to have problems with the neighbors, with the Gentiles, then you're going to have problems with food coming in.
So you're going to have to divert. Hey, that's a challenge. You know, I like to build. I'm a builder. I want to build in the desert. Well, that's if that's, that maybe there are people. That's their thing in life, to build in the desert. To go across, that's nice. That's one, but that's not a, that's not a Yitzhak. Such a person is not one. He's a person who's implement. That's also part of the goal of Torah. Implementation and building centers and all that. But that's not Yitzhak. That's not the Vilna Gaon. He's conquering the world of ideas. He's bringing the system to the highest possible degree of abstraction and perfection. Yeah, that person, you don't send him to build a community in Arizona. He needs a place where everything is set. Everything is set. They, in fact, I remember reading that he was so totally involved in the world of ideas that, as you can imagine, he didn't spend much time with his family. He wasn't the family kind of a person. Obviously, you can't. You have to make a decision. This is it. This was his life. His life was Torah. So everything. How much time do you think he spent with his wife? I don't think they didn't hang out. I don't think they had any quality time. And all. Maybe it wasn't very quality time, but it wasn't like a quantity time. No, but I remember reading that that people were upset that she was alone, basically. You know, I guess you can call it a Torah widow kind of thing. And they said, as I remember reading, that she should go and ask for a divorce because he's a tzaddik and he would not keep her in a situation where it should be in pain. Right? So she said no. She understands, and she's extremely happy. That's her purpose in life. She's a perfect individual, and her whole purpose in life. I mean, she was married to the Vilna Gaon. There was a marriage, but I'm sure there was a marriage. But the idea. Most people want that closeness and spending more time and all of that. To her, she said, no, I'm very happy that whatever sacrifice you want to call it, that's for the sake of quality Israel, because she understood what his purpose was. And she identified with it. She was extremely happy that she was enabling him to be the Vilna Gaon, the quality Israel. See, she was devoting her life to quality Israel. Now, not everybody's cut out to do that. It's now, you know, when you hear that kind of thing, it sounds wonderful. Then an emotion. We all have that emotion to be the tzaddik, you know, to be a... There is an emotion to be self-sacrificing, although it's not too frequently seen in our society. But that doesn't mean just because you have that emotion that you should do it, because not everybody's cut out to be the Vilna Gaon, not everybody's cut out to be the Rebbe of the Vilna Gaon. You have to know, you have to be very smart. In Judaism, everything is Torah's chesed. Chesed, you know, when you want to do chesed, you got to do it with Torah. It's all Torah. If it's done, that's what I'm trying to tell you at the beginning, which you didn't like the point I was making, I could tell. That you know, young kids want to be compassionate. They want to save the world, save the whales, and save the world. You know, but they can't. You can't do it. There's no. They want to be compassionate. There's no compassion when all these fools today in politics, and I don't mean just kids, even the politicians, because they haven't advanced either. And the politics of compassion, it's all nonsense because they don't know what compassion is. It has nothing to do with true compassion. It's just their emotions. Compassion. That's why it's Torah Chesed. If it's not Torah chesed, it's not chesed. It's just an emotion. And who says that if you're just following your emotions of compassion, then who says it's compassion? It could be a tremendous cruelty. It's just your emotion. That's why we have a terrible situation today. All the emotions at work, liberalism and sympathy for the oppressed, and all of this nonsense, which created a whole climate of liberalism, letting people get away with murder, and fear to punish them, and no capital punishment. All these emotions of compassion created a climate in which people are extremely brazen and cruel. There's no fear. So they tried to undo fear of government, fear of God. You take a human being and you remove fear of God and fear of man, and you've got a killer. You've got someone who's just going to destroy. All right. So the next question we have to deal with is, why did he exclude, did he apostle Benoz Kanan? What's the idea over there? I'll tell you what, you could say, Avraham made the breakthrough. He traveled throughout the land, Vayikra B'Shem HaNeshem. So whatever opposition there would have been, he was prepared to encounter. And it doesn't seem that he encountered that much. Right? Even he had a little difficulty with Avimelech, and then Avimelech came to him, and he straightened it out. He established the base.
He was the pioneer. He established the base. Now I want my son. It makes sense.
The pioneers went to Israel to establish the base. They cleared the swamps. They fought the battles. Now they established the base. They don't want their sons to go out and have to go through the same steps again. They did it for a kiyum. Here's the kiyum. The kiyum will be. All right, and we learned Torah too. And in doing it all, I had the rifle in one hand and the gemara in the other hand. We did both. Yeah, but I'd like to see a situation where you can, from day one, you're going to be completely involved in the world of ideas. Why should you have to waste your time fighting a war? Okay. Now the question is, Benoz Kanani. The problem would be, you'll say, because it was a corrupt culture and all that. By the border, of course, he's not going to pick a corrupt girl. He would pick a good one. Did he mean to say? What's the point of it? Did he mean to say that you're not going to? It's an impossibility to find anybody at all in the entire country that was good. I mean, even in any society, even in corrupt societies, and I would venture to say, even in Nazi Germany. Which to me represents, in our time anyway, the ultimate in a depraved society, cursed society. There's individuals that are righteous, there were righteous people among the Germans. Not the Nazis, but among the German people. And in fact, this is after Nazi. One of the, did you ever hear of Pete Klarsfeld? Huh? He's a very, she happened to marry, she's a German. She was, I think she was born in the 40s. I mean, she after the war, basically. Well, she was born during the war, but I mean, she was a baby. I mean, she came of age in history as a German, and she was horrified to have, she's horrified about the past, but then she saw that that Nazism had not been uprooted from Germany. There were many Nazis in free. In Germany, being protected by the state, and living a secure life. Many of them were influential in politics. And she was tremendously courageous. She devoted her whole life to fighting Nazis. She married a Jewish guy from France, Serge Klarsfeld. He's a child of a survivor, he himself a survivor. And she maintained that Germany has an obligation A, to uproot Nazism, and B, to do everything possible to preserve Jewish people after that sin, to support Israel. And she was supposed to, because Germany was supporting the PLO and everything. She was very courageous. She did some extremely courageous things. Of course, there was there was a German prime minister who had some Nazi past, some type of linkage in the past, and he had become the prime minister. And she was appalled by this, and there was a meeting. He was speaking, I'm not sure what the situation was, but I think maybe at their, what is their congress, I don't know what it's called. And she managed to get in, and she wanted to draw attention to the fact. And she managed to get in, and she sat, and then in the middle of everything, she went right up to the front where he was speaking, and she slapped him in the face, and she started screaming, Nazi, and everything. She did it, and of course everybody was like, the police came down, and she did it to, this is a tremendously courageous action. To call attention to the fact that that this is a tremendous evil, and she was involved in hunting down Nazis, and she went to travel to Israel. She was involved in all kinds of causes to help Israel. She was recognized by Golda Meir, presented with all kinds of awards. She has a book. But so the point I'm making is that in any society, it's hard to say that you're not going to find one. One or not one, it's not the case. You're going to find some good people. So why not? What was Avram saying over here? He was fostering a whole people, huh? Just not one good person. The idea would be find a girl from Canaan who has the proper qualities. And it's here, but here it's an absolute lo-sikachish with no sakna. It was an absolute exclusion. Now, as I said, if he made an effort, he went, and he couldn't find anybody, then it would be justified. But this seems to be, and then according to Rashi, it's a little funny because Rashi says, "But if you can't, then you can't." So that would confirm what I'm saying. Obviously, then take from the daughters of Avani Rashkumamar. Again, not just anybody; it's got to be someone with the proper qualities.
point is, it's an interesting point. It doesn't mean that every person in the society is going to be corrupt. It doesn't mean that. You can find good people. But I think we really, there's something that we underestimate. You know, it's a talk to me, you don't realize the extent to which you're affected by the environment, by the society, in subtle ways. Every society has certain emotions, certain values, certain emotions, certain ideas. It's like, well, you see, like, and also most of these societies are very proud. You know, they base their own national identity. You know, a Frenchman feels proud that he's French. There's certain things that are French, right? And then there's certain things that are, of course, are German or English or British. You know, all these things are usually nonsensical. Yeah, but that's the point. But the point is that they do partake. And the American too. There are certain subtle ideas. I mean, that you have just because you're American. You'll look at situations in a certain way. It's very hard to overcome. That's why there's a concept of Eretz Yisrael. It's part of the idea of Eretz Yisrael. Is that in order to really fulfill the Torah way of life most properly, you can't be part of a different society. You have to have your own society, because society itself, but being part of the society, there's certain ideas, I mean, America has, that the good, what the good is, I mean, attitude towards the money, attitude towards sports, you know, the idea of take it easy, enjoying the good life, Miller time, I mean, right? I mean, these are things that, now, that doesn't mean to say that all of us are a bunch of drunken bums, it's just the party the whole time, but yeah, you go to a campus and you see how you join the fraternity and all that, these are the ideas that motivate people. Ah, but we're not like that. We go to yeshiva. Yeah, I know. We go to yeshiva. We're also part of the society. So what it means is there's a certain inherent limitation. Well, I mean, unless you're an individual that can free yourself. You'll see. If you're a thoughtful person, as you grow, you go through life, you'll introspect, you'll really see that it's... That because certain of these things are so subtly, you just take certain things for granted. You just take certain. You're going to look at certain situations a certain way. I mean, it's not completely logical. But if it's illogical, you reject it. Obviously, and you know what I'm saying. It's where it's not that clear cut. You see, but you're automatically going to have a certain bias in a certain way. As part of your environment. And you automatically, it's going to affect you. Your attitude towards romance. Like romance. Right? That's a big thing in American society. The whole society revolves around this whole idea. That this is it. That there's such a thing. If you find this person out there who's waiting for you and you're searching for it and you find it, and then you live happily ever after. It's a very powerful thing. It's very hard then. Okay, so we did a week after about 15 sessions or so, I can get you to logically admit that you're right, that you broke down the idea. Okay, does that mean you're cured? Yeah, so, alright, so it may help you to eliminate 5 or 6 maneuvered individuals that you probably would have gone with if you hadn't heard of that. I finally got you to see that this emotion, this way of feeling about a person, is not the ultimate thing. Because you see, people marry abusive individuals. Really, how do women get involved in a lot of these abusive situations? They're real animals. I mean, I've seen it. They mistreat them in a horrible way. Like, why are you with the person? Now, there's an idea of romance that's been implanted, and this person evokes that idea. And that's such a powerful thing that it blinds you and causes you to rationalize and prep for that. Even then, you'll say, maybe even that's part of the thing. Maybe that's what I have to do for love. Sounds crazy, right? Yeah, but it's a reality. Now, you people are intelligent. You're thoughtful people, so you don't accept those ideas. Yeah, but are you going to tell me that these powerful things don't affect you? Don't have no effect on you whatsoever? You're totally free of this? I'm just giving you, that's one illustration. That's from the culture. From day one, you've been involved in this culture, and it's not your fault.
and I've been involved in this culture, and, you know, without Torah, I would just be a victim of the culture. With Torah and studying, you know, with an ability to understanding psychology, studying psychology and applying a searchlight, and I look into myself, I've been able to see a lot of this stuff and work on it. And I'm still, I mean, it's how much I can free myself of these things is you know, it's just limited, obviously. To have been Enodoma, I would say, to construct a society which is founded upon the correct ideas, you know, from day one, you'd have a different situation. Now, my answer to this then is that he knew the Benoz Kanaan. He knew the culture, he knew the society. And the type of person that they were looking for was very unique. You see it in the story of Eliezer. Someone who had the capacity for a unique type of an idealism. Very idealistic individual. You see, the whole essence of the test is chesed. But it wasn't just an ordinary emotion of chesed, right? It was a Torah chesed. Yeah, the camel. I'll explain how it works, but it's the camel. See, America wouldn't produce that. America is such a me society. It's a me oriented, that even when people do things, it's all me. I would say that the Rivka that they found couldn't be produced in America. When I say couldn't be produced, I mean if it were so, it would be such an exception. I mean, I'm not saying it's impossible, but so improbable that practically speaking, it becomes impossible. If this society can't produce it, because in this society we're totally selfish. It's a very selfish, me-oriented, satisfying my emotions. My emotional self, my ego, the whole thing is a narcissistic thing, ego and promoting, even where it's tied in with ideals, even where it is idealism, it's still the self. You see? Getting recognition, needing recognition, getting recognition for being a tzaddik, you see? Getting awarded. All of the it's very difficult to imagine that the society could produce that type of a personality who's really an idealist, but an idealism which is based upon a chachma. Now, I don't know exactly the character of the society at the time, but that's the idea. And therefore he said that doesn't make sense. He's going to need, well, the person that marries Yitzchak, of course, has to be completely capable of living, fitting into the lifestyle of Yitzchak, his mission as an, and also in terms of her role as one of the imams. I mean, there's a dual purpose over there, and that just can't be anybody. And he was concerned, not just in an overt way. I'm sure you could find a person that's decent, but it's not just that's not enough. It's got to be that deepest type of perfection. And therefore, he sent them. Let's take like Rashi to his family. The family was different. Their family was a different family, obviously. He came from their family. There was a different type of people. They were independent type of people. They weren't conformists. And there was, but doesn't mean, you see, within that family, you'd have to search. Within that family, you'd have to search. Not everybody was Roy, you see. But it had great, like Lovin was a great person for the wrong thing. But he was a guy, he was a person. And you see, even in his house, he gave them room, he gave space. He didn't just he didn't force them in a certain direction. They had space to grow, to develop. And he held that there was a possibility of finding somebody. He had come from that, and after he was married to a relative, you know, so it was related to him. So in that family, and that's why it mentions after the Akedah that they told him, Hinei Yoldom Milka, right? Gam he that, right? That was the wife of his brother. You know, then that's the whole idea that he was told about what happened. And more children had come in, you know. So there were people in the family. Go search for the right one. There's a possibility. They will not be tainted by the society around them. That's what I think is the concept over there. But that makes sense. Well, Rashi makes sense then that it wasn't, according to this, it wasn't a absolute disqualification of Benoz Kanaan. It meant that we have to go by the ideal situation. The ideal would be someone that's not from the society. but and go to there. But if it doesn't work out over there, then search over here. We'll explain why that's the case. What the machlokas is. We have to explain the machlokas. What you're saying, every Av represents a role model, not just an abstract idea, but that idea is implemented in somebody's life. That's why the Torah is very machmen on that. It's very important. So whenever you're in a situation, whenever you're surrounded by other people, and everybody's doing it, and you have this temptation, think back to Avraham. And that is to say that you always remain an individual, and you have to live in accordance with what's true to your own mind, and you can't fall back on that. You can't blame it on the society that you're in, because you have a mind of your own. And that's a powerful, powerful tool. But the reality, I mean, when he's choosing a wife, you go by the reality. The reality is that most people don't operate that way. That's a different idea. You have to be a chacham.
Yes, so I would say like this. Only in a general way. I mean, how specific I can get, I don't know. Sometimes you have to be satisfied with a general explanation. See, Eliezer made a good point. There are two objectives. I mean, they're interrelated, obviously. But Yitzchak, in order to fulfill his purpose in life, right, his mission in life, needed a wife, obviously. He needed a wife. Okay, that was very important. So then, and Avram is saying that in order to secure the best possible individual for that role, to go to his family. Okay, now Eliezer agreed with that. Okay, he said, let's say I find the right girl, but the only thing is, she can't go to Canaan, or she refused to go to Canaan. Right? So, wouldn't it be logical, since this is extremely important to you, that you don't want, it's an absolute disqualification, you don't want the B'nos HaKanani, I'll bring yourself over here. Yeah, but in doing so, you have a conflict between two objectives. Right? One, because he's an old Tamima. And the idea of achieving his full potential as an old Tamima means he has to stay in Eretz Yisrael. Can't go chutzpah. So there has to be a compromise somewhere. Either you're going to compromise on your choice of the wife. You're going to compromise on the choice of the wife. Because if you don't take a girl from, if she doesn't want to go back and he can't come here, so I'm going to have to go to plan B. Right? Now plan B is going to be common. That's not the ideal. Or else you retain the ideal and you make a compromise on the other part of Yitzchak leaving the land. I mean, it's fully Yitzchak. That was the logical question. So what did he paskin? He paskin the Shamalacha. And he had to warn him, because this is a very tempting, I mean, you have to understand that you see the greatness of Eliezer. Eliezer was really committed to the whole idea, committed to the system, committed to the idea of Avraham. In fact, Chazal said that he wanted his own daughter. Well, you see how great he was, that he wanted his own daughter to marry Yitzchak, but Avraham ruled that out. Of course, it's the what was the thing? It's you're an Eved, and the daughter of an Eved can't marry my son. I'll explain that. It's a different idea. I would say, I'd put it in these terms, that, and I think it's an important idea that everybody has to think about. See, when a person is choosing a wife or a husband, and obviously it doesn't make any difference, it's a very powerful emotional thing. So, of course, there's all kinds of decisions. And then there's all the wishes. You can't get everything you want, obviously. Right? I mean, you're all aware of that. So this is the issue of compromise. You have to compromise. You start out, this is the dream come true. It's everything I ever wanted, right? Okay, but then you find out that it's everything you ever wanted plus a few things that you never wanted. Right? It doesn't happen. But of course, in Hollywood it happens, but not in Far Rockaway. Far Rockaway.
All right? So then the issue of conflict. Now, where do you draw the line? And this is what he was saying, that you, when it comes to your personal mission in life, your personal perfection, you can't compromise. I mean, I know a lot of situations. I mean, I know from the standpoint of the guy. You know, I don't want to make it look like the guy is the good one and the girl is the bad one. I'm sure it works both ways. But usually I've, because who comes to me? I mean, guys in yeshiva. Where the pressure, where the conflict is in terms of how to live your life. In terms of, like, he wants to live a certain lifestyle where he's going to be essentially involved in learning and spending, and parnassus would be secondary and, alright, within, reasonable, but a low-key lifestyle. So, and the day one, she wants more, all these types of things. So in that type of thing, I would say, of course, everything is within reason. I can't give you a formula. But the point is, you can't compromise on that which is the essence of the self. The essence of the self, that's what he's answering here. It's important, and it's extremely important. That's also important. Because it makes a major difference having the proper wife or the wrong wife. It makes a major difference, let's face it. You know, I mean, this is a very... The two most important decisions, practical, I mean, assuming a person is willing for perfection. So you chose Torah, live by Torah. But the two, from a practical standpoint, in my opinion, the two most important choices a person makes, I guess especially for men, more so than for a woman in our society, well, not in our society so much, but in general, even so, for a man, the two most important practical decisions would be his profession, parnassah, because that's going to tie you down. So what you do for parnassah, and two, the choice of a wife, because... And you see why the Torah, that's the real reason, by the way. The real reason behind the issue of intermarriage is not that you won't produce Jewish people, it's rather that you're going to become an idol worshiper, because you really become attached to this person. And once you're married to a person, you're going to be affected by them tremendously. I mean, you can't love the person and not be affected by their philosophy, even if you don't accept it, but it's going to affect you. That's the whole idea. It's an embrace of idolatry. Intermarriage is really idolatry. Now, so that's extremely important. The choice of the individual, that's why it's a real machlokas over here. And he doesn't know, Eliezer, what would be more important? Which aspect is more important? And Avram Paskin, Yishom Lecha. If it's a choice between something which is integral to the person, this is integral to his very mission itself, the idea of being totally involved. And Ola Tamima. As opposed to the a better wife or lesser wife, this comes first. And this you can't compromise. You can't compromise on the essence of yourself. And this is a very important Muslim haskel when it comes to choosing a mate. That if it entails something which you would have to, well, you may not always recognize it or know it as such, so you have to go to a chacham. If it is, you have to be able to compromise, and maybe you have to sacrifice for someone. Maybe it's an intelligent thing to do. To sacrifice would be very intelligent. Find a good person with terrific qualities, but it would be sacrificing materialism. You wouldn't live the lifestyle that you want. There's nothing wrong. I'm not saying anything wrong with it. But it may be an intelligent thing to accept a more modest lifestyle and the physical for a much better person. This person is never going to be wealthy. That's it. But I can learn a lot from this person. Very kind, very good, very intelligent, you know. And we'll have to struggle. That's one type of compromise. It may not be the right thing, because you just may not be capable, because you've been raised, you know, in the five towns. You may not be able to make that move, and you'll be miserable. If you're miserable, no. But if it's a compromise which is dealing with your essence, something which is essential to you, which you know you're going to have to be tampering with, if you're married to this person, you're going to have to be really making compromises in terms of justice, in terms of truth, in terms of anything which is essential, that's a different thing. But look at all the benefits I get. Tremendous benefits, those are externals. So he was saying over here that the importance of the wife is more of an external, and the importance of being in Eretz Yisrael is the essence, is more closely related to the essence. That's a good kasha. Alright, yes, a very good kasha. That seems to be contradictory to the Gemara, which says that there are three things you can leave Eretz Yisrael for. And one of them is a wife, one is a parnasa. I think learning, yeah, learning. A Rebbe. Even, the Rambam says, even if you have a Rebbe of equal ability in Eretz Yisrael, you can still leave to learn the chutzpah. If you don't have a Rebbe, that makes more sense. You don't have a Rebbe, you need a Rebbe. But let's say you have a Rebbe in Israel too, and the Rebbe is both equal. He says, you can go, because Lav Min HaKol, Adam Zochel Umar. Lav Min HaKol, not from everyone, Adam Zochel Umar, does a person merit to learn. Which means, it's a very important psychological idea, it means that the Rebbe may be just as smart and have the same knowledge, but there's a personal relationship there. You don't, you have to bear that in mind. You see, like, very often, personality makes the difference in a relationship. You just can't learn from that person. There's a problem with that person. Style, personality, whatever. Love and I call them, you know. You have Zohar to learn. I mean, I had Rabbeim in NYU. Two come to mind, each one for a totally different reason, had certain elements of their personality, which turned off a lot of people. A lot of people can learn. I had no problem with either one of them. Because I didn't care. One personality I enjoyed very much, and everybody knew that. Yeah. That's his question, is that you see that you can leave the land to marry a woman. Looking from a halachic perspective. We're talking over here in a different framework. It's more of a philosophical thing. This is pre the halachic system. And this is a particular individual. In Achinami, if you had a case like that, if you were putting in the other factors, can you leave yourself to marry a woman and being in chutzlars, you're going to lose your Torah, then it could be answered differently. But I mean, the Rambam is only concerned with the halacha itself, insofar as the isra of leaving Eretz Yisrael is concerned. You see? So the isra of Eretz Yisrael has a matir. And the matir is for these three things. Necessity. A person can't function without a wife. A person can't function without parnassah. Person can't function without a Rebbe. So for these three things, that overrides the mitzvah of living in Israel. That's a halacha. Okay? But all things being equal, though, well, we're assuming that all things being equal, the case of this is a specialized kind of a case, and it's really a philosophical issue. If you're going to ask a question about, you know, sending off your child to a different country, to a different environment, right? Well, he is leaving a makom Torah. Leaving a makom Torah doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. Right? Leaving a makom Torah to go to Morocco or whatever it is. Yeah, to find a wife. Right? Doesn't mean it's the right thing to do because you have to. And there, what kind of you know Torah life can you have? So that would be the wrong thing to do. But the halacha works in a different. Halacha is assuming all things being equal. And he can't find a wife, so it's a matir. Then you have to ask, does the mitzvah, I mean, after all is said and done, living in Eretz Yisrael is a philosophical ideal, but practically speaking, we have to treat it like a mitzvah. And if you're going to treat it like a mitzvah, it's going to be treated like a mitzvah, like any other mitzvah. You're not going to tell me that there's no matir whatsoever, that a person doesn't have any matir. If he can't do it, have a fine parnassus, so it doesn't make sense to say he has to stay in Israel and become a beggar rather than leave and go to Chutzlar. I mean, it doesn't make sense. So in the halachic system, it has to be established the way it is. You see? Okay. Next question is, what is the seeming contradiction in the statement? What is it? It seems to be a lot of excess there. Describing God. In God. Asher Diber. Why? That also should be something. I always look to the source here. Hashem Elokei Hashemayim, Hashem Elokei Chanim Beisavi, Hashem Omer Asmolati, Hashem Diberli, Hashem Nishpali Demo, Zarachet and Zarachet. I mean, what does that have to do with it? It should just be said, Hashem Elokei Hashemayim. We'll grant that. But after that, that's it. Who Yishlach? What does he have to keep mentioning all these things? The God who spoke to me. There's an interesting Rashi on Hashem Elokei Hashemayim. You see that it's not by, it should say Elokei Aretz. And in other places it does mention God of Hashemayim, Elokei Aretz. So Rashi, take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, V'lo Amar V'Elokei Aretz. And he didn't say, and the God of the earth. V'lo Mala Amar, but above it says, V'Ashbiyecha V'Hashem, Elokei Hashemayim, Elokei Aretz. Right? Where, in this very parsha.
In Pasuk Gimel, Mashbiach Eved Hashem, Elokei Hashemayim, Elokei Haaretz. That's a startling thing. If you can tell me that Avram only referred to him as God of the heaven, fine. But here, there's Beotis with the God of heaven and the God of earth. And here, when he's referring to God, he forgot about the God of the earth. So Rashi, that's an interesting thing in its own right. Make a shear out of that. In its own right. Nice bar Torah. Ulamala, I'm a Vashbiacha. Vashem, okay, Hashemayim, Varat. So what does it mean? Amala, he said to him, Achshavu, Elokei Hashemayim, Elokei Haaretz. Unbelievable. This is a fantastic Rashi. Now, when he took the earth, he was the God of heaven, he's the God of earth. What does it mean? Shergaltiv, the Sea of the earth. I made God known in the mouth of the people. What does it mean, the God of? God of heaven means that the God, if you study the world of Hashemayim, the world of the of nature, the spheres that reflects the glory of God. So it's the God of heaven. Everything operates smoothly in that world. It's the God of the heaven. When the world of mankind doesn't reflect the existence of the Creator, because no one knows about that. The whole world was in idolatry. The whole world was steeped in idolatry. So God's will is not being fulfilled. The God is supposed to be the God of the heaven and the God of the earth. So therefore, when I first, now, as a result of my work, you can call him God of earth, because he's recognized. People know about him. But when he took me from the house of my father, he was the God. He's always the God of Shemayim, always the God of reality. Not the God of the earth. I mean, I was the only one that knew it, but that's not enough. There was no society, there was no people that recognized him. Because people didn't recognize him. Means there was no systematic way for people to recognize him. He wasn't part of it. The fact that I knew him was one thing. There were other individuals that knew him. But by olam, in general, he wasn't recognized. So if you lived your life, you went through this life and this earth, you didn't recognize it. It wasn't part of the scene. God wasn't part of the scene, so to speak. Ushma lohaya ragobar. His name wasn't known in the land. So that's unbelievable. You see? That's an unbelievable idea. Now, the question is one. You see, but Avram phrased his statement to Eliezer very carefully. When he said, okay, Hashemayim. Okay, so that's the truth. We understand. Well, does it have any relevance to the statement? A lot of important information. Ashalakachani. Ashadibari. Alakai Hashemayim. Ashalakachani. Ashadibari. Ashanishbari. What's he trying to explain to me? A very fundamental yisod. What I'm talking about is Hashkach. Of course, it's the God of heaven, and God set up a system, and everything works in accordance with laws, because it's the result of God's creation. Yeah. But what about the issue? I know if it's God's will that we should live the proper life, that we should recognize him. But then the question arises, are we left purely to our own devices, or does God take an active hand in seeing to it that his purpose will be... The purpose is not just that he should remain Elokei Hashemayim, but that he should become Elokei Haaretz as well. And you see that in order to achieve that purpose, God does not leave the world, abandon it to its own devices. But God helps. God gets involved. But only when an individual comes along, and when an individual comes along, and he recognizes the true ideas, that's part one of perfection, and he identifies with the will of God and makes it his mission to fulfill that, to make it, because that can only be done by man. God can, that, in other words, there are two frameworks in which we are to recognize, in which God is known. It's the Elokei Hashemayim, and then this Elokei Haaretz, and the Elokei Haaretz can only be done by man. I say it can only be done, I don't mean it's impossible for God to do it, but that's what it is by definition. It's man's recognition, and man has free will. So, I mean, like God is not going to implant that idea in your mind. You've got to discover it on your own. Only man can do it. So, I took it upon myself to do that. I was the, and when I did so then God related to me. That's the Hashbach. Elokei Hashemayim related to me because my purpose was to fulfill the second aspect,
to make him Elokei Haaretz. And that's the purpose of God in this world. That's the entire purpose of the creation, so that Boi Olam will recognize me. And I embarked on that path, and God was with me. He told me what to do. He told me to leave. That's the whole idea of leaving that land, because in that land you're not going to succeed in your objective. And go to this land. In this land you will succeed. Vashenishpali, and then more than that, he swore to me that to your children I will give this land, which means that I will be the vehicle. I will be the vehicle for the establishment of a system which will fulfill the purpose of making God all Kei Haaretz. Now, when I'm the marriage of the life of Yitzchak, remember the Rambam says. Rambam says that the Ashkacha Pratis, God's providence, relates to individuals in accordance with the merit. You know, it doesn't mean everything that happens in your life is not necessarily the Ashkacha. But it could be the Ashkacha, because certain people merit it. It's in accordance with the merit, the level of the person. All right? That's the sheet of the Rambam. Basically, it's the sheet of all the Rishon. There's no one that's different. The notion of today that everything that happens in your life is a direct will of God is not found, there's no support in any of the Rishon. They all say differently. Okay? Now, the Ramban says it, Eine Hashem al Yireo, the eyes of God, meaning the Ashkach is upon them that fear him. He says, the Ramban and Chumash and the Sforno, they all say the same idea. A number of places. Now, the Rambam says, however, that the Klal Yisrael is always on the Ashkach. Anything that happens to Klal Yisrael is always on the Ashkach. So I'm saying over here, what he's saying, Yitzchak has a life as an individual. He lives as an individual. And insofar as that's concerned, he might be on the Ashkach, he might not be on the Ashkach. I thought, I don't know if anyone knows. But insofar, the Yitzchak has a dual role. Yitzchak is really part of Klal Yisrael. Because this was Klal Yisrael in formation. So they had a din of Klal Yisrael. Insofar as they're involved in building Klal Yisrael, so they're always on the Ashkach. That's what he's telling them. In other words, he wants to be Mazari. It's very important on a mission. You know, you can go on a mission, on a combat mission, and you can have professional, there's such a thing as professional responsibility. But that doesn't mean your heart is in it. And a good soldier, even if he disagrees with the commands, will carry out those commands to the fullest. But Eino Doma, a good soldier who's professional and who really believes 100% in the mission, it's a reality you have to accept. Right? Of two soldiers, professionals, I prefer the one who not only has professionalism but really fully believes in it. If the person doesn't believe in it, it's going to affect. So therefore he told them that I have every reason to believe I'm doing the right thing. This is because what I'm doing over here, the choice of a wife, is really important, extremely important. And all of I'm going to such extremes because of his role in terms of Klal Yisrael. She's going to be one of the imams. We're choosing one of the imams over here. So I am very convinced that this is the right thing, and I have every reason to believe that God will be with me. It becomes a very important element in Eliezer. You see, because Eliezer then goes from there to actually establish a test. And he's convinced that this is waiting to see if God has fulfilled, because he accepts this idea. But when it comes to the Ashkacha, nobody can say for sure. I'm a particular. I can't say for sure. So I'm just trying, I'm conveying this information to you to tell you that I can utilize the idea in a general kind of, the idea makes sense, and I have confidence, I have total confidence that I'm not doing a crazy thing. I have a basis to go by. But if you're going to ask me, does that mean that I have an actual, I know the specific of how it's going to work, that it has to work out this way, that it can't work out, no, that I don't know. Okay? But I have every reason to believe that it makes sense, that I'm doing the rational thing, and it's for the purpose of Klal Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael is under the Ashkacha, who Yishlach. That's why he said, Asher Elokei Hashemayim, whose purpose is also to become Elokei Haaretz, and when, who will relate to the Ashkacha, will relate to that individual who's involved in making him Elokei Haaretz. That's where the Ashkacha operates,
And Asha Diberli, Vasha Nishpali, Lazara Chayatein. You see? That means to say that this is information, this is part of the process. I have every reason to believe that this is the right thing to do from the standpoint of Ashkacha. But, Imlo Sova, but nobody knows. Nobody can predict how the Ashkacha is going to work. That's a very, very serious mistake, a big failure of today. I mean, you see that everybody is guilty of this today. Well, not everybody, but I mean, you see, that's a tremendous mistake with regard to these messianic movements, like Lubavitcher. When they begin to predict, they were predicting. Right? Prediction involved in specific prediction. The Mashiach is coming. We're in the messianic era. It's imminent. It's coming. That's what they said how many years ago. So they have to keep redefining the word imminent. Okay? Eventually, imminent will mean within the next 10,000 years. I mean, that's what happened, you see? But it's not just that, it's in Israel too. That's also messianic. This whole business on the settlements, the whole individual movement, it's the same thing. That's why the fanaticism, because they were now, the Six-Day War, in 6 days, just like God created. I mean, even Rav Meir Kahana, Zichron Levracha, who I respected, I remember him saying, just like the world was created in 6 days, they won that war in 6 days. People had this notion that they could predict how the Ashkenazi will work. How do you know? It's clear that since we returned and we rebuilt it and the 6 day war and this, and that, it is clear now that this is God's plan and God is sending us a message to conquer. This is what I'm leading, biggest part of America's Harav, the philosophy, right? That's a lot of the philosophy that I'm not saying that it, who it comes from Rav Kook himself or whatever, but I mean it's part of the idea is that the God is sort of sending us a message, giving us the land, and if we only take, that's the thing now, that's the, that'll bring about the Mashiach, if we only take over the entire land, and now that becomes Yahar Vayah, because whoever doesn't participate in that is a traitor. And then, so that's, how do you know? How do you know? I mean, is that knowable? There's such a thing as Nevuah. If a person comes to us, and he's a bona fide Navi, he's established as a bona fide Navi and he has a Nevuah, so then we have to listen. And if he says that I have a command from God that that the 6 day war was for that purpose and you are to conquer, I want you to move into Chevron. Okay, I want 100 families to move into Chevron tomorrow, that's the command. And he's a bona fide Navi, then we have a Chiv to do so, and whoever doesn't listen is Chayvim. Yidei Shemayim. But that's only with Nevuah. Without Nevuah, no such thing. There's nobody that knows the Ashkach. You can guess, but you should be very... Even Avraham Avinu, in his situation, in his context, what do we learn from Avraham Avinu? And everything he's saying is based upon a rock-solid foundation. God did speak to him. God did tell him, Lazarach etan et tzuzos. So God is involved in the whole process of building Klal Yisrael. So all he's saying is, it makes a lot of sense to me, you know, to encourage you. Don't look at the idea as being a crazy idea. It makes sense to me within the framework of my knowledge of God and as Elokei Hashemayim and my knowledge of God in his role as helping us to achieve Elokei Ha'aretz. But I don't know specific. I'm not predicting it. Therefore, there's a contingency plan, according to Rashi. If it doesn't work, we'll live with it. It's not fanaticism. There's a contingency. You see? That's the proof. Fanatics don't... if it's a good idea to settle the entire land of Israel because we want it and it's important for the Jewish people to return and we should, it's a good idea, it makes sense. So then, but if we can't, if reality is that we can't, we just can't, an impossibility, so we'll go a different way because it's not the end of the world. The main purpose of Eretz Israel is to fulfill the true purpose of Eretz Israel, to establish it as a center of Torah. And there we have an opportunity to live in a proper Torah lifestyle that will win over the other Jews, that will show them the beauty, the benefit, and contrarily it's doing just the opposite. First time in history you have all the Jews together in one place so that the non-religious can have take a look at how the religious live, and we're losing in droves. It's just the opposite. It's the other thing I want to talk about, the article, but that's a different shear. That's an important idea. V'im lo soveh. Why don't people learn from Avram? Vim Losov. Where's the Vim Losov at?
They don't say all these people that advocate, you know, with all the fervor, you know, we can't give up Chevron, we have to have Chevron, Pale, we have to have this. They're agreed. It's very important. Marzal feels very important. Assuming you have the right, not as a place to create these woolen bracelets, you know, that protect you. That's Kehler Rachum stuff. But there's always a Vim Losova. If not, so then we'll live with reality. That will be the ideal. You see? So for him, it's not a fantasy over here. God coming to the rescue and all that. It makes sense. It's a logical thing. And I have a right. I have a right to make certain assumptions. But I'm prepared. Vim Losova may be wrong because I don't know the particularities. Vim Losova. That's the concept. Agavurcha over here. Something about Eliezer. In Chavdal Lamates, he's recounting the story to the parents of Rivka. And he's telling them what happened. Omer Ladoni, and I said to my master, he repeats the whole story. Ulai lo selech ho'isha acharai. Perhaps the woman will not go with me. So Rashi says, Ulai lo selech isha. Elai ksiv. It's written without a vav. Elai, to me. Meaning for his benefit. Hoysalo, bas hoysalo Eliezer, he had a daughter. Vaya machaza limso elo, and he was searching to find some type of a ruse. Shayomlo Avraham lifnos elo, lasio pito. That Avraham would turn to him to marry his daughter. In other words, Eliezer was trying to get his own daughter to marry to have Yitzchak marry his own daughter. All right. Amalo Avram. Avram said to him, "Bini Baruch, my son is Baruch, is blessed. Viata Orer, and you're cursed, meaning because you're an Eved." The Ein Orer Medabek B'Baruch, and one who is cursed can't cling to one who is blessed. Now that's a very difficult idea on the surface. What does that mean? Just because of the Nevet, but his daughter is so I assume that the daughter is a fit person, is a tzedekis. And you see that Eliezer was extremely, if he's such a Orer, so how could Avram trust him with the most the kind base on Moshe B'chol HaShalom. I mean, he was the elder of his house. He had complete control. He must have trusted him. And he wouldn't have trusted him in this mission. But what does it mean? It sounds like if you read it superficially, it sounds like a very cold, insensitive thing to say. Very hurtful thing to say to a person. You know, you're a slave. And we're free people. We can't mix with slaves. It's cold. All right, he didn't mean, obviously, I don't know if he even spoke to him this way. First of all, the Chazal are communicating ideas. I don't think he spoke to him hurtfully. But the idea is, as you say, there's another aspect to it, too. What you're saying is that the very fact of Eliezer was a great person, but the very fact that a person has a status of slave has an impact upon him. Sorrow problem, yeah. Ray Chayda one time mentioned another thing also, which I think fits in.